Hello and welcome into the College Hoops Hives. I'm Leif Tulin, and this is interesting. I've never done one of these before, but it's a mailbag edition of the College Hoops Hive where I'm covering topics that you guys wanted me to talk about. This will likely be mostly regional, and I've got a list of questions from friends and followers on Twitter, and I'm going to do my best to go through all of them, and it may not be in a particular order, so stay tuned, and thank you guys for your submissions for questions, and let me have a topic to spout off about and discuss with passion and hopefully insights that help you understand your questions better. Well, here goes. And thank you guys all for your submissions. And if you guys like it, please let me know, and we can keep doing these almost every week. I'm eager to do this. So let's start at the top here. I'm in Utah, for those of you who do not know, so there'll be a lot of Utah, BYU, and Utah State questions. One that stands out from the beginning is, are there any key metrics that I look at now to predict deep tournament runs? So that's the first question. I don't look at any metrics in specific, but I will say one thing I look at is the ability to rebound the ball or turn a team over, so getting more possessions, allowing for off-night shooting to be made up for by the sheer volume of having more attempts. So you can either be a team that suffocates a team defensively, a la Houston, because they're very good at crashing the glass as well, or maybe you're a team that doesn't turn the ball over, like Kentucky, and they have a great assist to turnover, and they shoot a lot of threes, and even on the days they don't shoot that well, they can still win by being a high-octane offense. That said, they're poor defensively, and so there's some warts there. But I tend to look at teams that have the ability to compete on both ends. Everyone always says, oh, the top 20 of KenPom, both offensively and defensively, and 15 of the last 16 are within there. Well, I think a large part of that is that KenPom counts the tournament. So by the end of the tournament, the team that wins moves up, and they likely are the number one by the end of the tournament because they're winning those games. And they're playing better, and they're getting rewarded analytically for it. So I do think there's value to that, and it's likely the case that the winner will come from within those parameters. But it's something that I don't particularly care about as much. I like to look at rebounding, ability to force turnovers, and then the rest of it's eye test. So in terms of metrics, that's probably the main thing I look at. I think there's other components that, if those of you who listened to my last podcast with Matt Muehlbach, you look for pros on a roster, you look for multiple guards, you look for a team that can win in different styles, but those are all eye test things. Those aren't something that you can find in a box score or any analytics website. The next one, what conference prepares each team best for the tournament? Well, it's hard not to go with the Big 12, especially in recent years where the Big 12 has Kansas and Baylor who won two of the last 3 years. Obviously, last year there was a winner from the Big East in UConn, and there was a Big 12 representative in Kansas as a number one seed. There, I would say the Big 12 has the best preparation for two reasons. One, because there's a really good competition year in, year out. And I'm going to get to this. I know this is separate from what I was talking about earlier about, or tweeting about earlier, and those of you who are listening to this probably have seen it, that I think the Big 12 is overrated this year. But in years past, and this year too, the Big 12 has a lot of teams that are going to make the tournament, and they've played a lot of teams because they're in the Big 12 that are going to make the tournament. So they're battle-tested. And the second reason is there are different styles in the Big 12. A lot of teams in the Big 10, which is the notable curse of not winning since 2000 when Mateen Cleaves and Tom Izzo lifted the banner for the Spartans winning, and no team in the Big Ten's won since then. And everyone says it's because they play archaic basketball, because they play a bruising style of ball where they feed the interior, they play physically, they don't have very speedy guards. I think there's some truth to that, but I think the actual reason the Big Ten hasn't won is not because the best teams don't do that, it's because all the teams equip themselves with the intention of toppling those top teams that play that way, and so they become dependent on playing a certain style that stylistically is hard to win six straight games doing, even if you have some good teams. It's hard to win six straight games playing through the interior without great guard play and controlling pace when some of these teams are going to trap and try to speed you up. And obviously Purdue is going to catch some flack for having lost to a 16, and years past they've lost to a 13. They lost to a 12, and they lost to a 15 in the Sweet 16. Like, that's really not looking good for Matt Painter, but Matt Painter has been the epitome of consistency. And so I think they're the reason that Purdue hasn't won, the reason that some of these really good Michigan State teams hasn't won, is because they're too consistently playing a certain style of basketball that the majority of the country doesn't play. So the Big 12, the teams that have won, let's talk about Baylor. Baylor was excellent, and they played guards. They played a no-middle defense. They had four guards that were superb. Obviously, Davion Mitchell went ninth in the draft. Jared Butler was considered to be a better college player than Davion Mitchell for much of their careers, if not the entirety, and ended up winning Final Four Most Outstanding Player. Maceo Teague was a 3-and-D guy. They had numerous guys on the interior. Mark Vidal, who was a superb athlete. Jonathan Chamwa-Chachwa, Flo Thamba, Matthew Meyer. That team was loaded. They could play any style and beat you, but they chose to play fast, force turnovers, spread you out, and score threes. Kansas had three NBA wings. And Ochag Baji was a lottery pick. Christian Brown, who was the 21st pick. Jalen Wilson, who was also selected this year, along with two speedy point guards in Remy Martin and DeJuan Harris, and then David McCormick on the interior. That team could have played in a number of different styles, and they had good depth. So my point being, the Big 12 in recent years has had the most depth and the most quality of depth, and they've played multiple styles. Like, every night you have to defend in that league because every team is defending in a certain style. Most of the teams play no middle defense, but that's one that most college teams play. Like, a lot of colleges at the mid-major level don't have the athletes. Well, that's the most athletic league, the most physical league. So preparedness against that type of physicality doesn't allow for a jump in physicality to detrimentally affect the players once the tournament happens. And, like, a lot of people talk about San Diego State. San Diego State was allowed to play extremely physically, and it behooved them greatly. Some teams are more finesse-oriented, and that's not what the Big 12 does well. That leads me into my kind of tweet, and I don't know if there's a question about the Big 12 necessarily. Oh, there is one. One of them is how many Big 12 teams make the Elite Eight, and that's where I'll get into on my soapbox a little bit here. So the Big 12 this year, I do think, is the best conference. And this, I'll also answer another question about ranking the conferences. So first thing, the Big 12 is probably still the best because if you were to look at KenPom, you would see a lot of teams in the Big 12 ranked very highly. Houston's number one in KenPom. BYU's number 10. Number 13's Iowa State. Number 15's Kansas. Number 18, Baylor. Number 22, Oklahoma. Number 23, TCU. Number 27, Texas Tech. Number 29, Cincinnati. Number 35, Texas. Well, you would think with conventional wisdom right there that having the 5th-ranked team, Texas, being your kind of 10th-ranked team in the Big 12 would probably lead you to having about 10 teams make it. And they might. I think it's going to be a little bit lower than that. But that's where the depth comes in. But if you were to look at these teams the way I perceive them, I think Houston likely gets a 1 seed. I think Kansas gets a 2 or a 3. I think Iowa State gets a 3 at best, probably a 4. And if they fall off a little bit, a 5. That team's very defense-oriented unless when they play at home. And then at Hilton, they play very well from the perimeter. BYU's 10th in KenPom. They're under 500 in the league. So everyone says, oh my gosh, look at the strength. Look at the strength of the league. If this team is so good that they're 10th in KenPom, then they're clearly excellent. And the league's excellent because this team loses to other teams. Well, I actually think there's a depth and a breadth of mediocrity in the Big 12. I think that Houston and Kansas are pretty darn good. I wouldn't say great. I think Iowa State's a touch ahead of the rest beyond those two. And then you have BYU, Baylor. I think Baylor's probably a touch ahead of BYU and probably a touch ahead of TCU and Texas Tech, but we'll count that quartet in the same mold. I think Baylor's been masquerading around as a 3 seed in a lot of bracketology, and they're probably a 6 or a 7. I think BYU has been as high as a 3 seed. Right now they're a 5. I think they're more likely a 7 or an 8. I think TCU, who's gotten big wins and plays an interesting style of basketball where they rely on forcing turnovers and getting out in transition and out-athleting you and figuring out ways to score and make the game ugly, they're a difficult team to play, but they're not consistent enough to be a true threat in the way that you would perceive a team that has the 20th-ranked offense, apparently, even though their offense is sometimes a difficult watch, and the 49th-ranked defense. and they play very quickly. I think they're probably a six at best, probably a seven or an eight. I think Texas Tech, who was ranked just as highly as 15th earlier this week, is probably going to fall off to about an eight seed. That's the team that my eyes tell me isn't great. Oklahoma, who was ranked as high as eight in the country earlier this year, is falling down the polls, and they just beat Kansas State on the road, and getting road wins is very difficult in the Big 12, so kudos to them. Porter Moser is one of my very favorite coaches in college basketball, but I'm not that impressed by Oklahoma. I think they're likely a seven or an eight. So you're seeing that there are a lot of teams that are in the range of six through eight, and then you have three teams that are probably ahead of that. So I've listed seven teams. Let's see. One, Houston. Two, Kansas. Three, Iowa State. And this is in terms of just numbers, not with seed lines. Then BYU, Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, Oklahoma. And then I would say that Cincinnati and Texas are probably bubble teams at this point. Maybe Cincinnati is just within the draw. I kind of think they're going to come back to earth. I think Texas is getting better, but they had a terrible, terrible non-conference. And that brings me to the last point about why I think the Big 12 is overrated. The Big 12 is overrated by the computers because they did not play anyone in non-conference, and that matters because you get points for destroying inferior competition. So as of January 30th, which was 4 days ago, or 3.5 days ago, I tweeted out the non-conference strength of schedule for all of the Big 12 teams. Kansas at a respectable 63rd, West Virginia at 101st, Baylor at 124th, and that's just propelled up by playing Auburn and Michigan State. Kansas State, 181st, Houston, 220th, Texas Tech, 257th, Cincinnati, 298th, Texas, 302nd, BYU, 313th, Oklahoma, 314th, UCF, 325th, Oklahoma State, 333rd, Iowa State, 342, and TCU, 345th. Well, those last two are teams that I think are probably a four seed and a seven seed, and they're playing some of the very worst competition in the non-conference, and the computers inflate their stats for that. So I think you're going to see teams ranked in the AP poll highly. I do think this is still the best conference, but I think they're getting a lot of hoopla for previous accomplishments. I think previous renditions of the Big 12 have been better and more top-loaded, and maybe not quite as many teams make it, but that's because there are fewer teams in it, so there is more attrition. Like if you were to have a team be better, more top heavy in the conference, that means more teams have to lose when there's only 10 teams. Now that there's more than 10 teams, you're going to see teams be able to beat up on the middle and get a few more wins, and you're going to see a little bit of more parity but less dominance at the top and less inferiority at the bottom. So that's the end of my rant on why I think the Big 12 is a little bit overrated. I'd be happy to hear what you guys think there. Now, without further ado, I'm going to rank the conferences. I think the Big 12 is still the best this year, but I'm not sold on their legitimacy. Oh, and actually, before I forget, I have a question about how many teams will make the Big 12 from the Big 12 make the Elite Eight. I think the answer is one, and if you're in an elite conference, that's often been three. Like the Pac-12 had a number a few years ago, and they weren't particularly good. The ACC's had three Elite Eight teams in the last couple of years as well, with Miami, Duke, North Carolina. That's a conference that hasn't been particularly good in the last few years in terms of the regular season results, and then they prove it in the tournament. I tend to think the regular season results matter more, and it's just who gets hot at the right time. So I don't think that's like a solid metric, but I don't think that the Big 12 is going to make too many deep runs. I think Kansas is the most likely team to make it to the Elite Eight. I think I've been critical of them openly on Locked On College Basketball numerous times because I don't think they have a scorer to complement the likes of Dickinson and McCullough. McCullough's not a shooter, and he's forced to be one of their scorers. Dickinson is not a good anchor of a defense, but he is a very good hub offensively, both in the low post and the high post. He's probably their best shooter. DeJuan Harris is a reluctant shooter. Kevin McCullough is a poor shooter. KJ Adams is a superb athlete, but he's just not a great shooter. So that you can stunt and you can double, and you don't have to worry about being beaten from three. Enter Johnny Furphy, a freshman from Australia who's been pretty poor defensively, but he moves without the ball and he makes you defend in different angles, and he's got height. So if he were a terrible defender and he was 6'2 and 6'3, maybe that's not very good. Well, he's 6'7", 6'8", and he's going to make a difference for them. So I think he's raised their ceiling substantially. I would have said this was a Sweet 16 team that was masterminded by Bill Self to find their way that far. And that's pretty rare to say about a team in Kansas that's won 17 of the last 18 Big 12 championships outright. That's a dominant stretch. And they've won recently, and then they were one seed the next year. So I think that's the team to look out for to make it to the Elite Eight. I do think Houston's got a chance to get that far, but boy, do they struggle to score. They make it arduous. It's very difficult to score against them, and so perhaps their best offense is playing great defense and wearing you down. But at the end of the games, I have very little faith in Jamal Shedd, which pains me to say because he's one of my favorite players in college basketball. He's one of those guys that is defensively absolutely sensational. He defends your best player on the perimeter, and he gets the rim, and he takes it upon himself to take over late in the game. But he's not a natural scorer. This team, mind you, had Jairus Walker, the 8th pick of the draft, and Marcus Sasser, the 26th pick of the draft. And Sasser was an upperclassman, All-American candidate. And they were ousted last year, not because they couldn't score, but they couldn't get stops. That was atypical, and Sasser was hurt. Now you lose Sasser, you lose Jairus Walker, you lose some other bigs on the interior, and you bring in L.J. Crier, who's a great shooter, but he was a third option on a team in Baylor last year that was talented in the backcourt. But he was the third option, playing lower on the scouting report in the same league, and they were ousted easily in a game I was at in person by Creighton, who was in control and up by 20 for the majority of the basketball game. So do you think he or L.J. Crier or Jamal Shedd are going to lead you to the promised land in close games? And in madness, there are close games. I don't think Houston blows the doors off anyone but a 16 or a 15, and who knows, even that could be close. Last year, they played a fairly close 1 versus 16 game. And they played Auburn close in the 1-8 game. So I've got tempered expectations. I could see Iowa State making a bit of a run because they're really good defensively. And if they get hot shooting the ball, and they've got a couple bodies that can shoot it in Gilbert and Moshilovich, and then Taman Lipsy puts pressure on the rim. I just don't have that much faith that they win that many games. I don't think Baylor's that great. I don't love their guards, even though they have a lot of them that have promise and talent. They don't work very well together. BYU, there's a lot of people that are asking me about BYU on this. My thoughts on this team is they're better than I anticipated this year. I came in thinking they'd be about 6-12 in Big 12 play. I kind of think they're going to be about 8-10 now, and 8-10's impressive, and they played well in the non-conference. But I just think there's going to be a point where shooting falls down a little bit. This team's tough. They're strong. They're not particularly athletic, but they know what their strengths are on the basketball court. They shoot, they space, they play through numerous players, so you can't just take one player away and have it all solved. So I think there's a way they can win a game in March, and I think they make madness, even with that record that I project. But I don't see the metrics like that say BYU is in the top 5 in net and top 10 in KenPom. I don't see that. With my eyes, I see an 8 seed. And that scares me a little bit. I think because of the competition in the Big 12, they'll be well-equipped to face whomever they draw. And they could be fortunate enough to be a higher seed than what I've projected and play within the friendly confines of the Delta Center. And that could be very helpful for this type of team. I've got tempered expectations. I don't think Texas Tech wins more than a game. I don't think Kansas State even makes the tournament. I think Texas is going to get lucky to get into the tournament. TCU, I can see them winning two games, but they couldn't win two games with Mike Miles and Damian Baugh the last 2 years, so I just don't think that one happens. Oklahoma with Porter Moser, I think he's one of the best tacticians, but talent-wise, they just don't wow me. I think they play well together. McCollum's regressing a bit within Big 12 play versus how he started and got Oklahoma that high. He and Otega away, Milos Uzan, none of them are quite moving the needle for me. But that's kind of what I see from the Big 12. I could be wrong, and I'd love to, in a friendly fashion, argue with you guys about this. Okay, we shall move on to the rankings without further ado. I said that earlier, but this time I mean it. I think the Big 12 is the best. I think the SEC is the second best. And I think the Big East is the third best, the Big 10 the fourth best, the ACC the fifth best, the Mountain West the sixth best, holy cow, can't talk this late at night, and then the Pac-12. So the SEC is two because they've got three teams I view as contenders to make an Elite Eight in Tennessee, Kentucky, and Auburn. And I think Alabama is pushing into that territory. I also think that South Carolina is a supremely surprising team. Like, they were terrible last year. And Lamont Paris was getting questioned. And now he's probably the front runner to win National Coach of the Year. So that team probably makes the tournament. I think Florida is really, really underrated. They just beat Kentucky. And I tweeted before the game that that team should not be on the wrong side of the bubble because they rebounded at an elite rate. They have multiple guards that can do something. Zion Pullen, Will Richard, Walter Clayton Jr., and Riley Kugel. That's an amazing quartet of guards or wings, along with a lot of big guys and Tyrese Samuel, Micah Hanglockton, and Hauk, and Alex Condon. So there's eight players right there that are big time players, and I think Florida is a dangerous team. So that team makes it. That's six already. And in the SEC, I would hazard a guess they get a seventh. So that's probably the second best with some top heavy. And then the Big East, if Villanova were better, like their roster should be, I'd have more faith in the Big East, and they might even be pushing the Big 12 because at the top they're very good. I think UConn is probably the most consistent team in the country. I think in second place, Marquette's playing well right now. I don't love their chances, though I picked them to make the Final Four before the season. Creighton's a team that doesn't have enough depth, but on any given night, if they get hot, they can beat you because they can put up numbers, and defensively, they've actually been very, very good. Then you've got St. John's, Seton Hall, Villanova, Xavier, all teams, and Providence, and that's eight teams right there that I have a chance. I think six will make it from the Big East. I think six will make it from the Big Ten. I just don't think they have, their bottom three of the six are not close to as good as some of the other conferences. I think they'll have Purdue, obviously. They'll have Wisconsin. They'll have Illinois. Then they'll have Michigan State, Nebraska, and probably Northwestern. Those are pretty much interchangeable, Big East and Big Ten. Then I would take the ACC over the Mountain West. And this might be controversial, but the reason is that the bottom part of the ACC is far better than the bottom part of the Mountain West. Like, there are games in the ACC that scare you, as opposed to when you play San Jose State, they're 1-7 in the conference. Air Force is 1-7. Fresno State's 2-6. Nevada and UNLV, despite having poor records, are actually solid. So that's where the argument picks up. I think the Mountain West is going to get five bids, and there's a potential for six, but I think Utah State, Boise State, New Mexico, San Diego State, and Colorado State are all safely in. I think the bubble is an interesting conversation for Nevada, but I just right now I don't think they're going to make it. Wyoming's playing pretty good basketball right now. I'm not that optimistic they can take over for their bad start, and not to mention they're 1-7 away from Laramie, Wyoming. And then so the ACC, I made that point to say this. The ACC has North Carolina and Duke. Like, that, those are the two locks. Then you have a lot of teams that are on the bubble. And that's really strange to say because the ACC is one of the preeminent basketball conferences. Virginia just won a championship a few years ago. They're 7-3 in conference, but I think they're a bubble team. And this is a team I've watched pretty closely for a long time. I'm not impressed by them, but they're 12-0 at home, and they're 7-3 in conference. Florida State is 6-3 in conference, and like when I started this conversation on Twitter, they had a better record than that. NC State, I'm not impressed by, but they're 6-4 in conference. Wake Forest is 5-4 in conference. Miami came in with top 15 aspirations, and they're 5-5 in conference. Clemson was up to the top 11, and they're 4-5 in conference. So to me, I just named six bubble teams along with two locks and probably top three seeds in Duke and Carolina. So I think what ends up happening in the ACC is that Wake Forest, I'll say two of Wake Forest, Virginia, Florida State, and Miami make it, maybe three if Clemson starts to pick it up. And the reason the ACC is better to me is that these teams that I think are bubble teams, should they go to the ACC, I think Virginia would be a team that would play very well. The level of athletes in the ACC are better, and I think Virginia could do what San Diego State did pretty easily in the Mountain West just by transferring personnel. I think that Florida State's length and athleticism would be a nightmare if they played in that league and scouted it. I think Wake Forest's ability to score at an unbelievable lip, their margin for victory is 9 points, and that's really, really hard to do. So I just think the depth and talent of that league is better, but I do think the Mountain West will get more bids. Then there's the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is near and dear to my heart, and it breaks my heart that it's falling apart. But frankly, I'm not sure there's a real good argument for more than two teams making it right now. Arizona's in. They're 7-3 in conference, and they've been much maligned for, hey, they've lost three road games, and they shouldn't have done so because the league's not great. Maybe that's true. I think the next best team is Colorado. They're only 6-4 in conference. Colorado's 1-5 away from home. Yet when I look at bracketology right now, and this is going to make Utah fans that are listening to this not particularly pleased, but I really think this is something you should think about. And I've been trying to tell people in the know and people associated with the Utah team that I don't think that the metrics align with what's happening right now. And I think there's a swift fall off should a few things not happen. So I'll outline that. But to finish the thought, I think Arizona's the number one team in the conference. I would say Colorado, based off my eyes, is number two. Number three to me is Oregon talent-wise, but they're a bubble team for sure, and they've been riddled with injuries. I like, obviously, UCLA not being good, USC not being good, mars the conference's reputation. And then you have a team like Stanford and Washington State that are overperforming, but I don't think they quite have enough to get it over the hump. Washington State's climbed up the metrics, and they've got a couple good wins, and they're 11-1 at home. Stanford and Washington State are 6-4. And then we get to the Utes. Okay. For my Utes fans listening, some of you I've interacted with about this, but and this is not hindsight. If you are listening to this, you will know that at a particularly great breakfast spot that we frequent, I said last weekend that Utah needed to beat Washington. And they ended up getting thumped, absolutely pummeled. They lost by 25. So not only did you get destroyed in that game, but it's made the chances to make the tournament far more difficult. Utah went on a hot streak, winning 8 or 9 straight games that ended by the last one was beating Washington at the Huntsman Center. Then they lost by double digits in both Arizona and Arizona State, beat UCLA badly, lost at Stanford, beat the Oregon schools at home, lost by 20-plus to each of the Washington schools. Yes, Utah's injured. Yes, they beat BYU, whose metrics are really helping the Utes right now. So if you're a Utah fan, you really need BYU to do well. And then you get to the point where they've got 10 more games regular season. Colorado at home, when you guys listen to this, probably the day of. I think Utah has to beat Colorado to make it into the tournament. And I would have said they needed to beat Washington because what I do believe is going to happen is Utah will lose one of two, if not both, against the USC or UCLA, that road swing in LA. And it looks terrible, even though the loss, if it were to be a loss, would be like, oh, they just lost to a talented team. No, you're playing a quad three opponent, and this quad three opponent has a ton of talent, and it's a sleeping giant. UCLA is now 5-5 in conference. They're playing better. USC could have Collier back by the time Utah plays them. And I'm not saying that you guaranteed to lose, but it's very likely, in my opinion, that Utah would fall in one of those games. So now you pick up a quad three loss, and you've lost every road conference game so far. Yes, you have a road win against St. Mary's. That's very good. But St. Mary's wasn't the team they are right now, so you need to root for St. Mary's to beat Gonzaga tomorrow as well. I would say that if Utah beats Colorado but loses to Arizona and then loses one, if not both, of the road games in LA, it's a tenuous perch for the Utes. I get scared. Right now they're a 9 seed in a bunch of bracketology, and I feel like that's generous. I think the metrics are really helpful to the Utes, and I may get pushback for this. But I think at that point you're climbing an uphill battle. If Utah beats Arizona and Colorado, I think you're probably in the rest of the way unless you lose all the rest of the road games, which would include 5 road games. You can't do that. If Utah were to beat Colorado tomorrow and lose to Arizona, I think you need to win 3 out of the next 5 road games and win every home game the rest of the way. And that would be pretty difficult. I mean, right now it's Colorado. Let's say you win it. Let's say you split against Colorado. And so you win the home game. You lose to Arizona. You have to win all your road games other than maybe the Oregon game and then have a decent showing in the conference play to make it. So I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but I just think it's unrealistic. And Utah fans are being propelled up by reassurances from Joey Brackets and those in that field that I don't think are necessarily safe, because the net, it has a preposterous way of building out these candidacies. And then the other thing I'd say is if Utah doesn't get healthy, these dreams become very difficult, because Raleigh Wooster is Utah's second most valuable player behind Brandon Carlson. Gabe Madsen creates a lot of space, but Raleigh Wooster is the best perimeter defender, and he's able to be a steadying presence, whereas Davon Smith, though he's electric, just it doesn't have the chemistry with the team that I think Raleigh does, and the ability to create for others in a way that is able, is not something that is, oh, I'm either going to score and go at a breakneck pace and then create something, or nothing's going to happen. Raleigh's got a middle ground game where he's a steadying presence, he's also the best perimeter defender, and he's a very good rebounder as well. So health is really paramount for the Utes. Lawson Lovering, Raleigh Wooster, and of course just some people who ends up with nicks and bruises and stuff like that throughout the season happens to anyone, but the Utes got to get healthy and do so quickly. All right, so I spent a lot of time there, and I hope I broke that down. I really have some questions about that for the Utes, and I'm rooting for them to make the tournament. That'd be great. It just makes me a little bit wary. Here's the next question is, who are the contenders and pretenders? I don't want to go too deep into that just because I'd have to go through a lot of rationale, but I'll say this. I think to be a contender or pretender, you need to have some dudes. You need to have a backcourt with guys that can make things happen, and you need to have some athletes that are able to play different styles of basketball. So to me, UConn's the team that's most complete. It's exceptionally hard to go back-to-back. The last team to do it was 06 and 07 Florida, but they have a darn good chance. I'm impressed by North Carolina. I think the upside for Kentucky, because they can score so well, they've got a ton of different players who do it. They've got multiple pros, and they have a great assist to turnover and shoot 40% from three. That's an appeal. They are terrible defensively, though, but I still believe they've got a chance. I think that Duke's got a chance, though they're poor at protecting the rim. They've got more upside. I don't buy the legitimacy of Houston. I'm teetering on the edge with Purdue. I just don't love any team that's so dependent on one player, particularly a big, to be the team to win. And then you got a lot of teams that I think if you get a good draw, I believe in, like Marquette. But I think I would say pretender for Marquette, unfortunately, for my preseason predictions. Same with Tennessee, because if Tennessee doesn't have a good game from Dalton Knecht, they don't win. And if they even if they do, the rest of the players become so infatuated with what he's doing, they don't score, even though they're tremendous defensively for the most part. Marquette, it's the Oso, Iguodaro, and Tyler Kolek show. If Tyler Kolek has a bad game or foul trouble like he did last year against Michigan State in the second round, it's very difficult for them to win, especially with some of the injuries they've had, and they need David Joplin and Ben Gold to really step up big to win those type of games. There's a couple more teams I could go through, like Auburn intrigues me, but I'm not sure my eyes agree with the metrics on that one. Arizona has a chance just because they've got a lot of dudes, but my gut is that Kylan Boswell's a little overrated and was thrust in too big of a deal, and he and Caleb Love are a little shot happy at the end of games, and I don't love their final guard play. I think that covers it, and like I mentioned, I think Kansas has upped their chances finally playing Johnny Furphy, because what they really intended to do was play Arterio Morris, but he is, for lack of wanting to get into it, he's in some serious legal-ish trouble, and I think Bill Self put a lot of hope into him being able to play and be able to score baskets, which he would be really, really good at if he didn't have some serious issues. So those are the brief run-throughs of who I think has a chance to compete. How overrated is BYU is a question. I mentioned this at the outset. I think BYU is overrated because if you watch them play, they're 15-5. They're 8th in adjusted offense, and they're 25th in adjusted defense, according to KenPom. They've beaten teams they're supposed to beat by a lot, and they've played a few good teams close. They've lost twice at the Marriott Center already, once against Houston, once against Cincinnati, who BYU is probably better than. That's going to be a costly loss. They've competed fairly well on the road. They got a road win against UCF. They played Baylor tightly. I just think that, and they beat Iowa State at the Marriott. I think this is a team that can win a round and then, you know, play with a top level seed. But I don't see them as a real threat to win more than a game or two. And in a game, and it depends the matchup for me. Like if they're to play a team in an 8-9 game, that's a toss up regardless. But I just don't see them as the 5 seed that they're listed at right now. I think they're going to regress to about 8-10 in Big 12 play, lose to the big boys like Kansas when Kansas visits BYU if they do. And I think they'll lose on the road to most of the teams coming up. And I think you're going to see a little bit of a plummet down the seed lines and the rankings. But it's been a really impressive run from the Cougars so far. I really do like how Mark Pope coaches and how he doubled down on the belief on his players rather than going to the portal too early and used last year as a development year and had faith in his squad for the next year. How underrated is the Pac-12? The Pac-12 to me is underrated in the sense that a lot of teams can get you on any given night, but I just don't think they've got any top end prowess. Like Arizona is head and shoulders the most talented team, and then you have talented teams that underperform. So I think Colorado's really got to make themselves into a lock, because even right now they're on the bubble and I think they're the second best team, and that's just not good enough for a conference that's got a proud basketball tradition. I do think over the years that they've been underrated, though, because of the way they eat their own. It's much like the Big 12 has, but they haven't had the acclaim of the Big 12. All right. Fun question here, and I could do a whole podcast on this, but best college basketball national champion over the last 15 years. So the funny part is, saying 15 years ago eliminates the Florida team that won back-to-back 06 and 07. That would be a pretty easy one to go. But it makes the question better. So the main contenders to me would be 2018 Villanova, because they were a buzzsaw. No one was even close to beating them in a year where there was a lot of good teams. The top contender besides Villanova that year to me was Virginia, who lost to UMBC. And I know you people are going to be like, well, how are they a contender if they lost to a 16? Well, Virginia beat Villanova that year. Villanova, the argument against them would be that they didn't win the Big East regular season. And that was, I believe, Seton Hall did. And that's, I mean, I'm doing this off the top of the dome, so I could do more research, but I'm going to look this up. So Villanova 2018 had Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, Phil Booth, Omari Spellman, Eric Paschal, and then off the bench they had Dante DiVincenzo. So that's great. And now as I look it up, I'm trying to see if they won the Big East regular season, because I believe that the regular season is more important than the Big East tournament championship or whichever tournament that you're going to win. I think it's more important that you're better through 20 games in the regular season than it is to get hot for three. And then obviously Madness is the most important. Villanova, for some reason, it's not loading up for me on my computer. Here we go. So Villanova went 36-4, and they were the Big East tournament champs, and they were second in the Big East that year. That, I don't love that. Xavier won the regular season, and then there are 6 teams from the Big East that year, and there are 3 teams from it ranked very highly. So I don't love that. I the fact that they didn't win the regular season, that bothers me. So then the next contender, and I'm going to get some flack for this because many people erroneously believed that they were the best team. They weren't even the best team in the year they won. I'm going to go with Baylor in 2021. This was the year where the COVID had some impact on the season, and you saw some teams take some breaks. Well, Baylor went 28-2 and won the national championship. Those two losses came after a 2-week break. They didn't play a game between February 2nd and February 23rd. So 3 weeks, and they won both those games. And then they played a game again at Kansas, lost to Kansas, and they were sick and weary from COVID. And then they lost in the second round of the Big 12 tournament championship. I firmly believe this team was not going to lose a game all season. I remember they were supposed to play December 3rd in the Pentagon. at CU Falls against Gonzaga, who everyone thought was the best team. And I told my dad, I said, Baylor's going to beat the brakes off of them, but it's going to ruin my bracket because everyone's going to know Baylor's better now. They didn't play. I was furious because I couldn't wait for that game all season. Anyway, they play in the tournament, and Baylor beats everyone easily. I think this Baylor team is probably the best team in terms of start to finish of a year because they didn't even play any close games. Like, they won every game by ton of points, and even when they were close, they weren't actually close games. So if you take away those two losses, obviously they're undefeated. That's not exactly a fair comparison, but I really do think that COVID is a variable that needs to be considered. All right, two more teams, and actually I'll go three more. The other teams I'd consider, 2009 North Carolina. This is a team that featured a lot of pros. They were beastly. This is a team that could do whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, and knew they were the best team in the country the whole season long. I wasn't able to watch as much then as I am now, and so maybe I don't know quite as much. But they won the ACC regular season. They won the NCAA tournament. They were number one seed, and they blasted their way through. They won 100-158 in their first round. They won by 14 the second round. They won by 21 the third round, 12 the fourth round, or I guess the Elite Eight, 14 in the Final Four, and then 17 in the championship against Michigan State, led by Draymond Green. So that's a team that absolutely pulverized their competition. They went 34-4 on the year, and this is when college basketball was at a very, very high level. They lost to Florida State in the ACC tournament that year, but they were able to redeem themselves and really play well in a very good ACC that year. Okay, now I've got two more teams for you. The next one will be the 2012 Kentucky Wildcats, led by Anthony Davis. This is a team that nearly went undefeated. They went 38-2, and they were led by a freshman. I do think they got lucky that Kendall Marshall broke his wrist, and they very well could have lost had that not happened. They lost by one on a famous shot by Christian Watford at Indiana, and then they lost by seven on a neutral court in the SEC tournament. But this team was led by Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who were picked 1 and 2, Doron Lamb, Terrence Jones, Marquise Teague, Darius Miller, and that was quite a team. Like, that's really, really good. Hard to argue with them going 38-2. And then the last one would be my guy. I don't know if he'll listen to this, but I have a friend who loves Duke basketball quite a lot, and he told me how elite this team was all the time. And even now, I kind of give him a hard time about it, but 2015 Duke. This was Jahlil Okafor, Tyus Jones, Justice Winslow, and Grayson Allen came off the bench. And they had Emil Jefferson and Matt Jones and Quinn Cook as veterans. This is a team that the reason I don't like them as much is they didn't win the ACC regular season. I believe Virginia won it that year. And then secondly, and this is not their fault, but Wisconsin beat Kentucky, who was 38-0 entering the Final Four. And then Duke beat Wisconsin in the final because of Grayson Allen had a spectacular game. But they also beat Wisconsin that year at Wisconsin early in the season and did so in pretty dominant fashion. So this is a really good team. But there's a real argument that year they weren't the team to beat. And that's hard for me to say that you'd be the best champion. So I know I didn't give a definitive answer, but those are my thoughts. Give me your thoughts on who you think's the best. They did beat Wisconsin. Wisconsin beat a 38-0 team, so I wouldn't go with Duke. If I had to pick one of these teams, based on what I've watched the most, Villanova was the team that was like, oh boy, like if you don't shoot well, you're donezo, because even then they're still going to outscore you the most. I was the most on Baylor. Like, I thought they were going to win the championship the entire year. So that may put me in a bias, but I think North Carolina was just the most dominant along with Villanova in their two separate runs, 2009 for Carolina, 2018 for Villanova. All right, let's see if I got any more questions as we're wrapping this up. One more, and I know the reason for this. How well can Samford do? Samford is doing very, very well. The latest bracketology has them set to play either Alabama or Auburn, so you get a interstate affair in either way. This is a team that is dynamic offensively. They score very well. Obviously, those listening know that Rylan Jones, who went to Olympus and was a Mr. Basketball two times here, is the point guard for that team. They have multiple guards that score, push the pace, and they've got a couple bigs that are more athletic than their competition. I think they're capable of pulling upset. It's always hard to say that a team that'll be seeded as like an 11, 12, or 13 has the juice to make it far, but a team that can score like that, I have more faith in than most long odds contenders to make a run. And last question, this is a different note. This is my guy Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft, and I work with him with Locked On NBA Big Board. He asks, who's your favorite freshman at any Power 6 school that won't be a 2024 prospect? That's difficult because a lot of teams will try to make it to the Power. Will try to make it into the draft, and they'll force their way. There's a couple guys right now that intrigue me. One would be long-term Johnny Furphy for Kansas. I think there's a chance if he finishes the season well, he'll leave. But he's a guy that has the makeup as a shooter and who's got a bigger frame that he can fill out that would intrigue me. I think there's a couple other players that are young that could come back. I think likely a couple of these Kentucky players will return or transfer because I don't think all of them will get the shine to go to the draft. And as for more freshmen, I'm going to have to look up a recruiting class. One that comes to mind would be Elliot Cadeau. I'm not sold because he's a very small point guard, but I think he comes back and he'll have a chance to really put an imprint on college basketball for quite a while. And that's something you don't see because he's already a starting point guard on a team that has a chance to win a national championship. And that's hard to do. So I'm taking a quick gander as I speak right now. And in terms of who could come back and is a freshman right now, who am I highest on? I like Jared McCain at Duke. I think he probably goes to the draft because he's shooting the lights off out of the ball right now. Oh, and actually, I've got an answer, and this is me being a biased person, but I hope and pray Kanan Carlisle comes back to Stanford because he's got juice. I think he's a better prospect than his teammate, Andre Stojakovic, the son of Peja, who got more national acclaim. And I think Kanan Carlisle's got first-round ability, and he's not talked about frequently enough. So that's probably my answer. And one other one would be, I like a few players for UConn that aren't getting that much shine. One of them being Solomon Ball. He plays a fair amount. And the other one, I think there's a chance that a few of these UConn guys get more chances when the upperclassmen leave. And Solomon Ball and I want to say his name is Ross are leaving. And those would be my other two that I would consider at this rate. But thank you guys for listening, and I know that wasn't a terribly definitive answer, Richard, but that's and maybe Jackson Shellstead. I think he's a 4-year guy, but he can really score for Oregon. And I recommend all of you guys who are listening to that, check out all these players. And I love that you guys are passionate about basketball the same as I am. The last guy would be Jalen Stewart, by the way, Richard. All right, well that's it right there. I am going to cut it off here, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was fun to record, and I hope you guys find this entertaining. And if you do, please let me know and send me more questions, and I'll try to do another one next week because it was fun to flesh out those thoughts. Have a good one, and thank you for listening to College Hoops Hive.